of this republic they rewrite. And now if you own everything in sight, they own it free of liability. They own, but they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jeff Connaughton, the author of The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins. He previously worked for 4 years as an investment banker, first at Smith Barney and then at E.F. Hutton. And he served as a special assistant to the counsel to the president in the Clinton White House, and then as special assistant to then Chairman Joseph Biden of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and later as chief of staff for Senator Ted Kaufman. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Connaughton.
Thank you, Ian.
And the president outlined a fairly ambitious agenda for the next 4 years in his victory speech. He talked about that we have to solve these challenges together, reducing our deficit, reforming our tax code, fixing our immigration system, freeing ourselves from foreign oil. We've got work to do. That's it in a nutshell. Any sense on your part that that's too ambitious? Because a lot of his critics have suggested that in his first term he was far too conciliatory, he reached out too much, he actually apparently believes in compromise and bipartisanship. But one would think that after this first bruising 4 years and this bruising campaign, maybe he might take Harry Reid's advice stated yesterday that we're not going to be pushed around.
Well, you know, again, he's going to have to negotiate with the same House Republican leadership and which has a Tea Party faction within it that hasn't changed much. So the real question is, has the dynamic facing the president changed so much? I mean, you know, frankly, a lot of people on the progressive side of the equation are concerned that he's going to be too conciliatory and he's going to reach a deal that, you know, will cut entitlement programs and, you know, begin to solve our deficit problem on the backs of the people who can least afford it. So that's going to be tricky, and no one can really say, you know, how that negotiation is going to come forward. You know, Boehner, the House Speaker, stepped forward and said, look, you know, we have an electoral mandate ourselves as the Republicans who just got reelected. You know, we don't intend on agreeing to any tax rate increases. So, you know, let's see if we have gridlock or let's see if we kick the can down the road on the fiscal cliff. Let's see what Senator Reid does about the Senate rules that will be adopted and whether the filibuster rules will change. It's hard to guess at this point whether the president can really be that much more successful than he has been in the past 2 years if you have an obstinate Republican House obstructing him.
So, Jeff Connaughton, your recent book, The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins, obviously leads me to question whether or not they won, given that most of their money went to Romney. I suppose it's a bit like the casino, the house always wins. But what's your sense of, are there some glum faces on Wall Street?
Without a doubt. I mean, they went all in for Romney. They wanted a president who would repeal the Dodd-Frank Act. They wanted a new president who would appoint regulators who were even closer to the banks than the ones Obama appointed, which is hard for me to imagine, frankly. And so, yes, I mean, I think Wall Street didn't get the victory. They didn't get to go on the offensive and sort of repealing some of what they didn't like in the Dodd-Frank Act. But, you know, what does that mean? You know, does that mean we're going to find that the president appoints a Treasury Secretary, assuming Tim Geithner leaves, who's going to be tough on the banks? I'm skeptical. Are we going to get a new attorney general, assuming Eric Holder leaves for the second term, who is determined to prosecute Wall Street executives for crimes? I hope so. You know, we can only hope. But again, I'm skeptical. I mean, I think Wall Street, you know, while it may have been the president's last campaign, it wasn't the last campaign for the Democratic Party. And, you know, Wall Street's going to start doing what it does, which is, you know, making sure that it's got influence and a seat at the table in Washington, because, you know, we're going to have another important election just 2 years from now, and they've got big pockets.
Well, your former boss, for whom you were chief of staff, Senator Ted Kaufman, who succeeded Joe Biden and who was not beholden to lobbyists and was therefore, one of those rare senators who can actually work and vote in terms of his conscience. And he, more than anybody, I think, pushed through the Consumer Protection Agency that Elizabeth Warren started, or at least suggested. And now, of course, she's been elected to the United States Senate. Does that give you any sense that at least that firewall against Wall Street, which the Republicans tried their very hardest to undo, will that stand and perhaps grow?
Yes. I mean, I'd give the president credit for the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. He did favor it from the beginning. It was Elizabeth Warren's idea. That wasn't really a Ted Kaufman accomplish. I mean, what Ted did was he put the banks on the defensive by going against the too big to fail banks to break them up, and that sort of gave breathing space to Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. But what's great about Senator Elizabeth Warren being elected is I think Ted showed that even one senator, one determined senator, and there were other reformer senators too working with Ted, but you know, even one senator can really do a lot to sort of change the balance of the way we look at Wall Street issues. And she's going to be able to do a tremendous amount, I mean, especially if she's on the banking committee. So I think Wall Street really does feel like they lost a lot when Scott Brown lost to Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts. And I hope she invigorates the debate in a way that reverberates with the Obama administration. I mean, you know, you have to be tough on your own party, you know, to make sure your own party is doing the right thing when it comes to Wall Street issues. And that's what Ted did, and I think that's what Elizabeth Warren will do.
So let's turn again to Jeff Connaughton, the author of The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins. Previously worked for 4 years as an investment banker, first at Smith Barney and then at E.F. Hutton, and then he served as a special assistant to the counsel to the president in the Clinton White House, and then a special assistant to then Chairman Joseph Biden of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and later as chief of staff for Senator Ted Kaufman. So having worked on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Jeff Connaughton, clearly there's an enormous backlog of judicial appointments, and the judiciary in this country has been skewed to the right by a dominance of Republican presidents, and not to mention the Supreme Court, which hangs in the balance. My understanding is that the backlog of judicial appointees nominated by President Obama is something of a record, and many critics say he hasn't really been sufficiently vigorous in pushing it through. Since he's got to play so much catch-up, do you expect the playing field in terms of our judiciary to be leveled in these next 4 years?
Well, I mean, what the Republicans used to do when the Senate was in the majority hands of the Democrats and we had a Democratic president was they would only filibuster those judicial nominees who they thought were too liberal or, you know, in their view, for the bench. What was happening in the past 2 years is they were filibustering every judicial nominee. I mean, it would, you know, some nominees would be tied up for 6 months, and then when they finally got a vote, because the Republicans allowed it, they'd pass 99-0. So the Republicans were filibustering nominees who in the end they had no problem with. So they were just clearly trying to clog the pipeline, slow it down so that, you know, hopefully in their view, they could get a new president in and they'd be, you know, be in control of who got picked as judges. So they're going to have to find some way to let that pipeline open up for the next couple of years at least, because we have to have a functioning judiciary. And I do agree, you know, there were a couple of times when there were nominees who were perfectly fine, qualified judicial nominees who you know, the president didn't push for. But people used to say the same thing about President Clinton, you know, that he didn't push hard enough for certain liberal nominees. I mean, it's a question of where do you want to spend your political capital? And, you know, if you appoint centrist judges that are still good on, you know, legal issues Democrats care about the most, then you can get most of those through. But if you try to go, you know, to the left and really appoint, you know, the ones the Republicans don't like, then you're going to have a problem. But I think, you know, Senator Reid has said he wants to change the filibuster rules in some way. So far, he's only indicated in how they apply to the motion to proceed to a bill. You can filibuster twice, both on the motion to proceed and on the bill itself, and that really slows down the Senate's ability to get any work done when the Republicans are filibustering every bill. But he hasn't yet talked about whether he would change it for judicial nominees. And it wasn't that long ago that, you know, the Republicans, when they were in the majority, were thinking about changing it, and that was called the so-called nuclear option. I mean, I think you're going to find Republicans getting very geared up about sending the message, you know, you would really poison the well if you change the filibuster rules for judicial nominees. But, you know, maybe Reid's going to do that. Maybe, you know, it's only going to, I mean, the way he envisions doing it is with a 51-vote majority adopting new Senate rules on the first day the Senate comes in session. So he doesn't need any Republican votes, but, you know, next time the Republicans are in control, you know, and we're in the minority, we'll regret it. That's the trade-off.
Well, it sounds like something's got to break the logjam. Certainly the indications from the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, aren't encouraging. Something has to happen, and, you know, maybe...
Well, here you have senators who were just elected campaigning against the filibuster. I mean, so there's even a mandate. I mean, Angus King, the independent who was elected in Maine, I mean, he was saying the Senate's broken. It's not in the Constitution to require a 60-vote margin to get anything done in the Senate. So there are going to be some very strong-minded senators there saying, you know, we need to rethink this. You know, we need to be able to function more effectively. But, you know, it does tend to make the Senate more like the House, you know, in that, yes, you still have two per state, but if it's only a majority vote, you know, that doesn't protect the rights of the minority.
Well, but I don't think that you can shame the Republicans into doing the right thing, can you? I don't see
any. That's the big question. I don't think Republicans have changed their stripes at all. I mean, I maybe because of the election, they have to look like they're going to be more willing to work. And McConnell's already said if the president's willing to meet us halfway in true bipartisanship, then we'll work with him. But, you know, the problem is, as he also said on his 60 Minutes interview with Senator Reid last week, you know, he just doesn't believe in where the president and the Democrats want to take the country. So, you know, I'm not sure they're going to be any more willing or able to find common ground when you have these deep disagreements about tax and spending and just about every other issue.
Well, Jeff Conniton, though, they had their way with George Bush. They got everything almost they wanted. Remember, when George Bush came back for his second term, he said, I've got political capital, and I'm going to spend it. And
well, he tried to privatize Social Security,
right.
And Senator Reid opposed him every step of the way, and thank goodness he did. You know, I mean, if we had privatized Social Security before the financial crisis, it would have been a disaster, you know, for everyone who, you know, wants Social Security to be there in your retirement age. So,
right, but I think the broader point being, though, that everything, when the Republicans got their chance under George W. Bush, it was ruinous, both domestically and in terms of foreign policy, and they haven't come up with any other suggestions, and I think the American people noticed that and voted Obama back in.
Right. That was the most interesting confirmation from the exit polls, that people really do judge the Obama administration in the context of how poorly President Bush had done and how bad off the country was when Bush handed the keys over to the new president. So, you know, I think people do see this as, okay, we've come some distance in pulling ourselves out of this recession. The economy is moving forward, and so the president deserves another 4 years to continue his ideas.
So just in closing then, Jeff Connaughton, given the president's ambitious agenda here to reduce the deficit, reform our tax code, and fix our immigration system, and free us from foreign oil, the one that that Democrats are worried about is reducing our deficit. And even Bill Clinton has talked about Simpson bowls in very positive terms. And, you know, already a lot of the debate about Social Security has been distorted. They talk to us, they refer to it as an entitlement program, when in fact it's paid for, and it always has been, and it could be modified to have the wealthy pay a little bit more. That'll make it much more solid. So there's many things about the Democratic traditions, if you will, going back to FDR, the very bedrock of the identity of the Democratic Party, if indeed it has an identity, which many say that it's sort of lost its way. I can't imagine why a group of Democrats, with the mandate that Obama's been given and which the Senate's been given, would be in any way in a mood to compromise and in any way eviscerate Social Security. That would be like a form of unnecessary, well, I guess suicide's unnecessary to begin with, but you see what I'm saying? I mean,
oh, absolutely. I mean, again, if you look at it, you know, our current problems in the context of what happened during the Bush presidency, I mean, these deficits are primarily a product of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and expanding prescription Medicare Part D, all on a credit card. You know, after Bush had cut taxes for everyone, we went on this gigantic spending spree, you know, well before the president took office. So now are we supposed to balance, you know, solving the deficits on the backs of people who, you know, have paid into Social Security and rely on Medicare? I mean, you know, the progressives are going to go crazy if the president compromises in that direction. But that's the box that he's, you know, about to be forced into. And frankly, I don't see any of his advisors, you know, he's not being advised by people like Robert Reich and Paul Krugman, you know, who say, look, austerity, you know, made things worse in Europe. I mean, the only way to get this economy growing again is to, you know, not worry about the deficits for another year or so, and to actually, you know, I think Senator Schumer, you know, called for more stimulus today for, you know, the Northeast after Sandy. But others are going to say we have to address the deficits now, and the fiscal cliff is looming.
Well, there's some serious losers in this campaign. If you think of Sheldon Adelson and Karl Rove and even Netanyahu, and I think, you know, I would like to be able to add to the list Pete Peterson, who's on this one-man campaign as the leading deficit hawk, and he spent a lot of money to convince people that the sky is falling. And I must say, I don't find a Wall Street billionaire to be the most credible person in terms of telling us that we all should tighten our belts while those on Wall Street don't tighten theirs.
I mean, Citizens United had us all scared that money was going to buy this election, and it didn't. And that's hopeful. I mean, the president was raising gigantic amounts of money in the fall, primarily from small donors, which is, it's reassuring. You know, we do have a democracy, and we do have the ability to fund presidential campaigns with a lot of people giving small contributions, and that's what will dilute the power of the plutocracy that has come all too close to taking over in Washington.
Well, Jeff Connaughton, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeff Connaughton, who's the author of The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins. He previously worked for 4 years as an investment banker, first at Smith Barney and then at E.F. Hutton. Additionally, he served as special assistant to the counsel to the president in the Clinton White House and then as special assistant to then-chairman Joseph Biden of the Senate Judiciary Committee and later as chief of staff for Senator Ted Kaufman. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with an historian who accurately predicted the Obama sweep.
Don't tell that to boy.